Ross Molin Podcast.
You better listen.
Welcome back to the Ross Bolin Podcast, presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin, here with producer Cade Orris. And Cade, today we are going to get jacked up for Halloween.
Yes, and I'm appropriately dressed for the occasion as well.
You are. You're dressed in your trademark Buddy the Elf costume. As everyone who listens to our show knows, this is the only costume Cade ever puts on, and he does it every time it is even remotely appropriate.
In any holiday,
Halloween,
you're gonna find me in
Christmas,
this costume. St. Patrick's Day.
Works for all three of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wearing my Sauron shirt, the one I got from an Instagram ad that now plagues so many of you, to celebrate evil. 'Tis the season to get spooky, and that's what we're going to do on this rainy, dark, gloomy October 27th leading up to Halloween. So let's jump in and get started.
Grab your light, this is Stop the Wikipedia. When you're high,
Stop the Wikipedia. When you're high,
today's Stuff the Wikipedia When You're High is Winnie Ruth Judd. Winnie Ruth Judd was a medical secretary in Phoenix, Arizona, who was accused of murdering two of her friends, Agnes Ann Leroy and Hedvig Samuelson, in October of 1931. And those are names you don't hear anymore. Hedvig. There's not even a Hedwig anymore.
No.
Wasn't Hedwig one of the Harry Potter owls?
Yeah, he was the owl.
Harry's owl?
Harry's owl, yeah.
The main owl?
The main owl, yeah.
Did they all have owls?
Ron had a rat.
I don't understand how he, because like, what wasn't the owl used to deliver mail and messages and such?
Yeah.
So Ron just had to send a rat out?
He didn't send his rat like a message. No, they had like a family owl, I think. The Weasleys did. It wasn't the brightest.
Do you remember Ron's rat's name?
Scabbers.
Scabbers.
Scabbers, yeah.
Yeah.
Who ended up being a human being.
He was a person the entire fucking time, which is actually really weird when you go back and watch the first couple movies leading up to that moment where you find out that Scabbers is in fact this very plump, yeah, short man.
Yeah, Ron was just sleeping with a grown-ass man the entire time, had no idea.
Anyway, to get back to Winnie Ruth Judd, the point is you never hear the names Hedvig or Winnie Ruth or Agnes anymore. No. Yeah, those are all 1930s names. So Winnie allegedly committed the murders of her two friends, Agnes and Hedvig, to win over the affections of Jack Halloran, a prominent Phoenix businessman. And speaking of how those other names we said sound like they're straight out of the 30s and you never hear them anymore, Jack Halloran, a prominent Phoenix businessman, sounds like a present day, or like more aptly, like a 1990s like used car salesman, like Jack Halloran in Phoenix, Arizona. Like, that does not sound like 1930s to me at all. But Judd was tried for Leroy's murder, found guilty, and sentenced to death. However, her sentence was later repealed after she was found mentally incompetent, and she got committed to the Arizona State Asylum for the Insane, which was later renamed the Arizona State Hospital.
Which was later renamed Arizona State University.
Yes. So over the next three decades, Judd escaped from that asylum six different times. Doesn't seem like the security of the asylum was solid.
No, I imagine after like the first couple times, you probably like want to keep a better eye on her, but I guess
Yeah, come on. Come on, guys.
Too many loonies in there.
What the hell? After her final escape during the 1960s, she remained at large for over 6 years and worked under an assumed name for a wealthy family. She was ultimately paroled in 1971 and discharged from parole in 1983, which just means she was no longer even under the surveillance of the government in any way, shape, or form. So to take you back to how this all occurred. At age 17, Winnie married Dr. William C. Judd, who was a World War I veteran more than 20 years her senior, and she moved to Mexico with him. William was reportedly a morphine addict as a result of war injuries, and he had difficulty keeping a job, forcing the family to frequently move and live on an uncertain income. The marriage was further strained by Winnie Ruth Judd's health problems and inability to bear children. So by 1930... the couple were mostly living separately, although they remained in constant communication, apparently. I don't know how that could be, living separately in the 1930s, how you're remaining in constant communication.
Well, maybe they're sending owls.
I guess, yeah, the owls and the rats.
Yeah.
That's how. Because they didn't have text messages. I'm just like, I don't understand. Anyway, Judd, called by her middle name of Ruth, moved to Phoenix, Arizona, where she worked as a governess for a wealthy family. During this time, she met John J. Happy Jack Halloran. So his nickname is Happy Jack, a 44-year-old Phoenix businessman who was active in the city's political and social circles. So he's some sort of a socialite, Happy Jack. Although married, Halloran was known as a playboy and philanderer. Okay, do you even know what a philanderer is?
Yeah, you kind of just, you know, you mess around outside your marriage.
Yeah, not a philanthropist. That's a different deal entirely. So he was an adulterer, a philanderer. And Judd and Halloran became friendly and eventually had an extramarital affair. After a few months, Judd began working as a secretary at the Grunau Medical Clinic in Phoenix. There, she met Agnes Ann Leroy, an X-ray technician, and her roommate, Hedvig Samuelson, who had moved together from Alaska after Samuelson contracted tuberculosis. So I guess when you get tuberculosis in Alaska in the 30s, they're just like, you need to move to Phoenix, Arizona.
Right, you need a warmer climate.
Yeah, you need that sunshine in Arizona. So the two women were also friendly with Halloran. To be clear, Hedvig is a woman. So is Agnes, more
so
obviously.
Were they like friendly or like, you know, like friendly if you're catching
I think friendly is in air quotes here. Like, yeah. They were all friendly with Halloran, Happy Jack, mm-hmm. the playboy philanderer. So Judd became friends with Leroy and Samuelson and even moved in with them for a couple of months in 1931. But differences developed between the women and Judd soon returned to her own apartment located a short distance away from the rented bungalow shared by Leroy and Samuelson. So it sounds like there was some kind of a love square going on.
Yeah.
Not a triangle, but a square.
Yeah, yeah, four. Uh-huh. And that'll make a square.
Exactly, yeah. So at the time of the murders, Judd was 26 years old, Leroy 27, and Samuelson 24. According to police, on the night of October 16th, 1931, Leroy and Samuelson were murdered by Judd after an alleged fight among the three women over Halloran's affections. The prosecution at Judd's murder trial would suggest that quarrels over men and the relationship between Leroy and Samuelson broke up the friendship of the three women, and that jealousy was the motive for the killings. 2 days after the murders, on Sunday, October 18th, 1931, Judd, with her left hand bandaged from a gunshot wound, boarded the overnight Golden State Limited passenger train from Phoenix's Union Station to Los Angeles, California, along with the trunks and luggage containing the bodies. En route to Los Angeles Central Station, Judd's trunks came under suspicion from baggage handler H.J. Mapes due to their foul odor as well as the fluids escaping from them.
That'll usually raise some suspicion,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Also, that has to be so many bags and suitcases she has to carry with her.
For two different people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how good you are at dismembering, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Mapes, the baggage handler, alerted the district baggage agent in Los Angeles, Arthur V. Anderson, that the trunks may have contained contraband deer meat. In those days, apparently deer meat was frequently smuggled aboard trains running to the West Coast. That was a big racket, kid. Deer meat. So Anderson tagged the trunks to be held until they could be opened for inspection. He asked Judd for the key, of course, but she stated she didn't have the key with her. Burton McKinnell, Judd's brother, and a junior at the University of Southern California. Shout out to all the USC grads out there. He picked her up from the train station unaware of the murders or the bodies. Judd departed with her brother, leaving her trunks behind. At around 4:30 p.m. that afternoon, Anderson called the Los Angeles Police Department to report the suspicious trunks. After picking the locks of each trunk, the police discovered the bodies. Meanwhile, Burton had dropped his sister off somewhere in Los Angeles, where she proceeded to disappear. Judd hid out for several days until she eventually surrendered to police in a funeral home the following Friday, October 23, 1931. The murder became headline news across the country, with the press calling Judd the Tiger Woman and the Blonde Butcher. Now, I have no idea, and at no point in this Wikipedia article do they allude to where the name Tiger Woman came from.
Yeah, that's not making much sense.
Don't know why. That was it says eventually, though, the case came to be known in the media as the Trunk Murders. Really creative we are in the media. And Judd became known as the Trunk Murderess again.
I think I like Blonde Butcher at the
moment. Blonde Butcher is, yeah, it's just hotter.
Yeah.
You know? Judd's trial began on January 19th, 1932 at the Maricopa County Courthouse, with Judge Howard C. Speakman presiding. The dismemberment aspect of the double slaying was never addressed in court because Judd was only tried for the murder of Leroy, whose body was not dismembered. She was never tried for the murder of Samuelson. So it sounds like she had a big-ass trunk that she literally stuffed Leroy's entire body into. Which is bonkers, and I guess she couldn't fit Samuelson, so she chopped her up. The state argued that Judd acted with premeditation, that the relations between the three women had deteriorated over some weeks, and that they had argued over the affections of Happy Jack Halloran, all of which culminated in the murders. The prosecution maintained that Judd had herself inflicted the gunshot wound to her left hand to try to bolster her claim of self-defense.
I was wondering about that when you mentioned that earlier. I'm like, where the gunshot wound come from?
Sounds like she shot herself.
Yeah.
She was like, this will get me off. If anyone discovers that I've got these bodies in my trunks, it'll be fine. Judd's defense contended that she was innocent because she was insane, but did not introduce the self-defense argument for the record. Judd did not take the stand in her own defense either. The jury, what was that?
I was going to say, that's always like the move, it seems like. I feel like there should be a way to like not just claim you're insane to like get out a murder.
Well, they do have to. They like, you can't just be like, I'm insane, Your Honor. And they're like, oh, well, that's a shame. We'll go ahead and
throw you in the loony
bin. Yeah, they bring in like psychologists. Like each side has their own doctors and they evaluate you extensively. And I don't think it's easy as it once was.
In the 1930s.
You know, in like the 30s, I think it was probably a bit easier. So, and also, these days, I guess they're not even called asylums anymore, but our hospitals for people who are unwell mentally are a hell of a lot nicer than what you were dealing with in the 30s. I don't think being thrown in like the Arizona State Asylum for the insane was a big step up from just regular ass prison. Might have been even more terrifying and worse. Who the hell knows? But anyway, Judge defense, they used the insanity plea. The jury found Judd guilty of first-degree murder of Leroy on February 8th. An appeal was unsuccessful. Judd was sentenced by Judge Speakman to be hanged February 17th of 1933 and sent to the Arizona State Prison in Florence, Arizona. Of course, her death sentence was overturned after a 10-day hearing found her mentally incompetent. So then she was sent to the Arizona State Asylum for the Insane in April of 1933. So she escaped from that institution six times between 1933 and 1963. So for 30 freaking years, she's just escaping on repeat. In one instance of her escape, she walked all the way to Yuma along the old Southern Pacific Railroad tracks. Judd escaped for the final time on October 8th of 1963 using a key to the front door of the hospital that a friend had given her. So in the same way that I don't think these hospitals were all that nice or helpful at this point for people with mental issues, they also were not very secured.
No, it's not sounding like it.
How the hell did her friend have a key to the front door? She was just able to get like a sit down with her and slide her the key across the table. Like, we'll just use this after everyone's asleep.
Yeah, probably wasn't even discreet there. She's like, hey, I got this key for you. Here you go.
And are there not like several doors between the inmates and the exit or the patients and the exit? Like, how is it just she was just able? Anyway, she just fucking walked out in one of them. I don't even know if that should be considered an escape. But that was the final time she escaped. She literally used the front door and a key. So she ended up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where she became a live-in maid for a wealthy family living in a mansion overlooking the bay, and she was using the name Marion Kane. So she scores this gig living the good life in a badass crib, a mansion overlooking the San Francisco Bay. After 6 years, her identity in California was eventually discovered, and she was taken back to Arizona on August 18th of 1969. Imagine having a family living in San Francisco. You've got a great big mansion, and you're like, oh, we need a live-in maid. We need somebody to come live here and help us with the children and the cleaning. And then 6 years later, after that person has been living with your family for 6 years, you find out they're not who they say they are. And in fact, they chopped up one body and stuffed it into a suitcase, and they stuffed another body just whole into a suitcase, and they're a murderer, a convicted murderer. That would be something, wouldn't it, Cade?
Yeah, no, I definitely don't want to.
You don't want to experience that?
Yeah, absolutely not.
No. Judd hired famed San Francisco defense attorney Melvin Belli, who in turn hired Larry Debus to handle her case. Governor Jack Williams of Arizona agreed to sign for Judd's release as long as the meeting was kept hush-hush. So it sounds like they were like, look, she got out, but also she was a great live-in maid. Like, that's surely enough to prove that she can rejoin society safely. And the governor of Arizona was like, fuck it. I don't want to deal with this anymore. She's escaped 6 times. So they just let her go. However, in the following days, Belli called a press conference calling for Judd's immediate release, forcing Debus to fire Belli. And Judd was paroled and released on December 22nd of 1971 after 2 years of legal wrangling. So it took a while. In 1983, the state of Arizona issued her an absolute discharge, meaning she was no longer a parolee, which is just wild. Like, this is a woman who chopped somebody up, stuffed them in a suitcase, stuffed somebody else into a suitcase hole, was declared mentally incompetent, and sent to, at that point, what was known as an insane asylum. And then later in life, they just discharge her completely. They even take away her parole. Like, she can just, like, be free. It's crazy to me. Anyway, Judd returned to California to work for the family that had previously employed her. They rehired her?
They found out about the murders. Like, she's so good at dusting.
She's rehabilitated.
We gotta bring her back, yeah.
You gotta lock that. When you find a great maid, you know, you never let them go. Just mm-hmm. like a mechanic or a dentist.
Or a barber, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so she moves back. She later lives in Stockton, California, then went back to Phoenix for a few years before her death, where she died on October 23rd of 1998 at the age of 93, 67 years to the day from her surrender to the LAPD in 1931.
Spooky.
So the lesson is, Cade, you can dismember a body and kill another and stuff them into suitcases and go on to live a long and fulfilling life,
yeah.
as a live-in maid,
yeah.
for a rich person in San Francisco. No big deal.
What a life to live.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Hydration isn't just for athletes. Podcasters need to stay hydrated too, so we avoid dry mouth during the heat of battle while recording a show. Without today's sponsor, Liquid IV, Cade and I could be suffering from dehydration right now with dry-ass mouths that sound horrible on the microphone. You don't have to be an athlete to need extra hydration throughout your day. From Zoom meetings and workouts to long travel days and fun nights out, Liquid IV makes it easy to stay hydrated. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone, all in a single stick. And now their hydration multiplier comes in 3 delicious sugar-free flavors: white peach, green grape, and lemon lime, a proprietary zero-sugar hydration solution with no artificial sweeteners. We have a massive supply of Liquid IV here at Bolin Media's office, which makes us perhaps the most hydrated media company in the entire world. And Liquid IV has been one of our longest-running sponsors, supporting your favorite Bolin Media shows for years now. We love Liquid IV, and 1 stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, no artificial sweeteners, and zero sugar. For daily use before a workout, or when you feel run down, or after a long night out, and on long flights. Grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Ross at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Ross at liquidiv.com. Now I am going to tell a story that I have told before, but it's been many years, and it's very creepy. It's a very horrifying story that fits well with the season, with Halloween, so here we go. And Cade, anytime you have a question, if you have a question, feel free to stop me and just ask it, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. At my former job, I was in a stereotypical office building. A lot of different companies there, several floors to this building, big-ass parking lot outside with a bunch of cars or whatever. The people that work there drove the cars, if that's not something you're picking up on. One day at like 3 p.m., I was like, I'm going to go ahead and just try to sneak out early, like get home, relax a little earlier than usual, maybe even take a nap or something. I'd been grinding. I was tired. I deserved it, Cade. Plus, at this point, my boss had not shown up to the office in like 6 months. So I was like, fuck it. Nobody cares anyway. It was a weird situation. So I kind of snuck out of the office nonchalantly. I didn't run into anybody in the hallway. There was nobody in the staircase as I made my way down to the first floor. Nobody in the lobby. And I'm out the door into the parking lot.
Sounds like how Winnie escaped the insane asylum.
Yeah, pretty much the same way, except I didn't even need a key.
Yeah.
So I start walking to my car, and I've got my phone out texting my non-work friends, like, your boy's getting out of here early today. I'm living the high life, celebrating my escape, kind of. And at this point, I was driving a very used 2005 Lexus ES 330. So this is not in 2005. This is probably like 2016. If I had to get, like, prime Bill Chungus years, okay? And anyway, had the Lexus ES 330. It was a great car I paid for in full with the insurance check I got from totaling my Tahoe when I ran it into a boat in traffic here in Austin. So as I make my way to my car, which is probably like 100 yards from the building's entrance slash exit, I see a big object between my car and the truck parked next to my Lexus ES 330. And I'm like, huh, what the hell is that? I get closer, and I get closer and closer, and when I'm about 20 feet away, I realize, holy shit, it's a man, and he's not moving. Big, big man. Looked like probably in his mid-50s to mid-60s, somewhere in there. Kind of a big guy, you know, and he was dressed like he got his, like, corporate wardrobe in the 1980s, and he just never upgraded. Like, slacks, very old-ass button-down that had been worn and washed too many times, kind of a tacky tie with it, bad haircut, no offense, but the man had not upgraded any aspect of his style since he started working in corporate America in the 80s.
Just beating a man while he's down right now.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to it was just that much eerier of an experience because the dude looked like he had hopped out of a 1980s like corporate America
like
time
he was trying
machine.
To like he's been there since the 80s. Yeah, like just like was, trapped and like he finally up. Got out.
It was fucked up. So this man is on his side on the concrete parking lot pavement, leaned up against my driver's side door. So, I mean, like, you know, part of you deep down, like, considers, like, well, do I just, like, get in my car and drive off? Because, like, what is this? What do I do? What is happening here? But he's literally up against the door. So, like, that's not an option.
Yeah.
Like, I would have to go in through the passenger side of my car, climb over to the driver's seat, and then drive off as his body, like, thumps along the side of my vehicle. So I was not about to do that, right?
And, like, out of all, like you said, it's a big-ass parking lot.
My and car.
And it just happened
had to
be
my car, man.
I mean, that's just karma right there for you. No, leaving work early. Like,
that's what I get, dude. Yeah. Trying to sneak out, trying to fucking cut corners. This is the lesson. But so I stop short, like, 10 feet away from this guy's body, and I start half yelling, like, sir, 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 are you okay? Nothing. So I move closer. And as I move closer, it quickly becomes all too apparent that this man is dead. He's very dead. Like, heavy sweat stains starting at his neck, down his chest, huge pit stains. And he had, like, pissed himself, so his pants were soaked, and he was kind of in a puddle of his own piss and sweat, just dead as a doornail. I'm not a doctor, but the way I saw it, like, he dropped dead of, like, a heart attack. Like, he clearly...
Was it a hot day?
Oh, yeah. Very hot day. And at this point, I freaked out a little bit, like, holy shit, there's a dead guy up against my car. And I look around, and there is nobody else in the parking lot. So, like...
I wonder why.
I'm not exaggerating... Yeah, exactly. But, like... Again, big building, lots of companies, people come and go when you work in an office building, like all times of day. It's not just like people only enter at 9 and exit at 5. So to not see anybody like down the hallway, down the stairs, in the lobby, or the parking lot made this even creepier because I was just kind of like, is this real? Like, am I dreaming right now? And I call 911 And I think this is the only time I've ever called 911 in my life. And I was like, you know, they're like, 911,
what's your emergency?
Do you need, like, yeah, ambulance or fire or something like that? And I was like, I don't actually know. I am in a, I'm in my work parking lot, and I've just discovered this man. I'm pretty sure he's dead, and he's on the ground up against my car. So the 911 operator starts asking me all these questions, like how I found the guy, whether or not he's breathing. Like, so I had to like put my hand down like next to his face, kind of,
his and sweaty just, face,
like get a closer look. Like it just, it was so strange. And, he tells me I need to pull him out from between the cars and get him flat on his back and give him CPR. And I'm like, holy shit, you've got to be kidding me. And like, I've seen some stuff in my life up to this point, all right? But I had never seen a dead body, like not up close, not that wasn't on TV, certainly never had to touch one before. And I was just like, I mean, at this point, my adrenaline is going and I'm like, what the hell is happening? This is so, it's so outside of like what I expected to occur the rest of my day that it was just surreal. And just then, one of my coworkers who was also sneaking out early is walking through the parking lot, and he like sees me and he sees this dude on the ground, and he's like, dude, what the fuck? And I'm like, get over here and help me move this body so I can do CPR on it. Because again, big dude, like 6 feet or taller, probably 6 feet-ish and maybe 250. Okay. So like, this was not easy to move this guy.
Your coworker definitely thought you murdered.
That's what I, dude, for sure thought that I'd committed a murder, right? And like, so he comes over and he grabs the feet while I grab under this guy's armpits and we move this big guy. And my coworker like basically helps me set him flat on his back behind my car. And then he's like, peace. He leaves.
He's like, all right, I'm going
to
see you.
I'm not hanging around to see like what happened here or what's going to happen here. And
well,
like,
now he's an accomplice.
Exactly.
Your murder.
Exactly. His fingerprints are all over this dude's feet and shit. Yeah. So he bounces. And so I've got my phone in between my shoulder and my cheek, and I'm talking to this 911 operator while he instructs me how to give CPR to this very dead, great big fat guy that time traveled here from the 1980s while I wait for the ambulance to arrive. So he's like, ambulance is on the way, but where our office building was located, like I was pretty certain it was going to take a little time because there's a lot of traffic, a lot of stoplights. Not that the ambulance is all too affected by those because, you know,
they usually just run
siren.
Right through those. Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, first of all, I'm like, I don't know how to do CPR. He's like, I'll tell you how to do it, and I'm going to count for you. Just get down on your knees, get right over his body, and put your hands like here and here on his chest. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what if I save this guy's life by restarting his heart? So at that point, like, I don't know this man.
Right.
But I'm like, if this is awful, like, what a terrible, terrible way to go.
Mm-hmm.
It would be sick if I could save this guy.
Yeah. Did you make out with him? I mean,
no. So you don't have
mouth
to do
mouth.
You don't. I mean, that was one of the first questions I asked. I was like, I don't know about like, I'm not like gonna. And he was like, you don't have to put your mouth on his. We don't do that anymore. There's no more mouth to mouth. But the 911 operator was like, I'm gonna count as you pump. So he's like, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, he didn't
4.
Do the staying alive.
Or, I guess he kind of did it, but like, I had to pump to the beat, essentially, as he counted.
Yeah.
And as I'm pumping on this dude's chest, like, spittle and drool are coming out of his mouth. And it was so... And again, his chest is, like, wet from sweat. And I had to pump on this dude's chest like that for, like, 5 minutes, maybe longer. And finally, the ambulance arrives. And by that time, I'm all sweaty and out of breath, like, from trying to save a life. And again, this is Bill Chungus here. So, like, I'm not in great shape myself. It's fucking hot. It's the middle of summer, probably 100-plus degrees outside here in Austin. And as the ambulance, like, rolls up, it occurs to me that this dude probably died doing the exact same thing I was doing. Like, he's trying to sneak out of the office early. He probably put something in the passenger side of his car because that was the side that was facing my car.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, as he shut that car door, he, like, went into cardiac arrest right there just from walking from the exit of the building to the car in that heat. And like I said, this is not a man who took care of himself. Not that I had any room to judge at that point, but he had, you know, 30-plus years on me and was much more at risk than I was. So it was just like, I couldn't stop thinking about, like, what if this happened to me? Like, does he have a family? Did they not even know? Like, he's just lying here, and I'm, like, trying to resuscitate this fucking guy? Like,
yeah. It was kind of like a wake-up call for you, as Bill Chung. You're just like, I
gotta get my shit together.
Yeah.
I gotta get my shit together, yeah. And so the ambulance drives up. They park right behind my car, right next to the body, and they work on this dude. Like, four fucking people get out. And they're working on this dude for, like, 45 minutes. And this is when I learned that, like, even if you're really, really dead, like, when they come across, like, they still have to treat you. So they still have to try to resuscitate you, kind of regardless of how obvious it is that you are fucking
gone.
Yeah,
they can't, like, show up, like, oh, he's a goner.
Yeah,
let's pack
just
it
ship
up.
You up and bail, like, which is what I kind of expected. And, like, when that didn't happen, then I just, like, it was even more traumatizing to have to stand there and, like, watch them work on the dude. So now the ambulance and a dead body are behind my car. I can't even leave if I want to. In front of my car is not only another row of cars, but also between my car and that row of cars, there is a median with trees all down it. So, like, my car is not going anywhere is the point. And again, this is like 45 minutes that they work on this dude. They, like, cut his shirt and his pants off. They hooked him up to a defibrillator at one point. They're shocking his corpse to try to revive it. It's just a grisly, grisly scene. And I, you know, you could say, like, Ross, why didn't you just, like, walk away? Well, I was pretty fucking invested at this point.
You want to see what happens.
I just pumped on this dude's chest for a while, like, called 911, moved his body. Like, I'm invested in seeing. I'm like, honestly, I was praying. I was like, please, just God, just bring this dude back. Like, let this fucking defibrillator work, man. Like, I didn't just go through what I went through for nothing. Like, I don't know this guy, but come on, bring him back. And as the minutes went on, like I said, 45 minutes plus, it just got more and more depressing. Like, oh, he's not coming back. This is over. A cop shows up, and literally at no point in this 45 minutes did anyone ask me a single question. The only interaction I even had with the ambulance was waving them down when they pulled into the lot so that I could be like, it's over here, we're over here. Me and this fucking...
the body's over here.
me and this body are over here. And at this point, I was like, oh God, is there like a chance I get accused of murder? Nobody saw this. I'm the only person here. Who's to say how this happened or didn't happen? Like, you know what I'm saying? Right. Just like, it crossed my mind. I was like, am I about to be like part of an investigation? But again, no one says anything to me. Cop doesn't come up to me. Ambulance, fucking, what are they called?
Paramedics.
Emergency. Yeah, whatever. The paramedics don't come up to me. EMTs. Nobody says shit to me. So finally, I go over to the cop and I'm like, hey, I'm the dude who found the body. Like, do you need anything from me? And he was like, eh, I don't know. Not really. You got your ID? And I was like, yes, I've got my ID. And I, like, pull out my ID and give it to him. And he's like, he kind of just looked at it. It's almost like he was like, I don't need anything from you, but also I feel like I should make you feel involved somehow. So he, like, took my ID, looked at it for a second, looked at me, and then just gave it back to me like I was trying to buy alcohol. Like, he didn't write anything down. He didn't record anything.
That's just, it's all in his brain.
So I was like, dude, it's like, what happens next? And he was like, how about you give me your phone number? And we can call you if we need anything else. And I was like, okay. Like, I don't know what the fuck you would need, but sure. So I gave him my phone number. Nobody ever called me. I never got to hear, like, shit about what happened here. Like, who this dude was. There was never like an announcement in the building like, we lost Gary from accounting. You know what I mean? Like, in the parking lot. So for anybody who got exposed to that, there's like trauma services available for you tomorrow. Like, nothing happened. And that was it. They loaded him up into the ambulance and the ambulance finally drove off. So like around like 5:30, I've been out here for 2 fucking hours dealing with this. They finally call it. They record the time of death or whatever. They pack him up and they bounce. And so by the time I finally get to leave, on a day that I tried to sneak out a couple hours early from work, it was later than my normal time to get off work when I pulled out of the lot. And it was like a few weeks before it stopped affecting me on some level. Like, don't get me wrong, I didn't like, you know, I didn't like have a meltdown or anything, but I was definitely like emotional on the drive home. Like, what the fuck just happened? What even was that? And then I had like some version of PTSD for a few weeks just from like the trauma of having to handle, deal with a dead body. I feel like it's not as bad as having to watch someone die. Like, it's not, he wasn't still alive when I found him and then he died. Like, yeah. He was fucking gone. I think it's harder to have to watch someone go than it is to find them after the fact. But it was still really fucked up, man. Like, it was like, I mean, I wasn't prepared for that. I had no prior life experience to prepare me for that. Like, nobody was like, and here's what you do if you find a body. Like, that shit just, it was so crazy because I had never dealt with anything like that before. And I felt grateful, like, at least I'm not the dead guy in the parking lot. But then, yeah, I was like, I got to get my life together, you know? I got to lose 60 pounds ASAP.
Don't want to end up like that guy.
I can't end up like this time traveler from the 1980s, man. But it was fucking brutal. It was brutal. And it was one of the, if not the, like, spookiest thing I've ever dealt with personally, where you're just, you know, 1 minute you're skipping out of the office thinking it's going to be a great afternoon, sunshine in the sky, and the next you're staring into a dead man's face while spittle and drool come out of his mouth and you pump on his chest as the 911 operator counts off the speed at which you're supposed to do so. It was fucked. I don't wish that on anybody. And hopefully that never happens to you here at work, Cade, because if it does, the body will be me.
Yeah, there aren't too many options for dead bodies at the office. It's either you or me.
One of us, yeah. Anyway, that's my story about the time I found a dead body. I believe this is the second time I've told it on this show, but like I said, it had been years, and it was a wild one. Any questions, Cade? Concerns? Thoughts?
Are you okay?
I'm good now.
Okay.
But it took a while. Yeah. Like I said, a few weeks before it was really like all the way out of my mind. Like, because, I mean, the next day, you go back to work and you park your car.
Did you park in the same spot?
Hell no. Hell no.
Wait, I never went, his car there the next day?
I never went near that row again. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. See, this is why you don't consider like the aftershock, but that's the thing. There's like the shit that you roll into the lot the next day, you're thinking about it. You see his truck is still parked there. You're thinking about like, well, who's going to come get the truck? Like, is anybody going to come get the truck? Is this fucking truck just going to be there now?
Just a reminder.
Just forever? Like, so I was like, please, somebody come get
this
fucking truck.
It's going to be haunted.
I know, right? So, yeah, it was an interesting afternoon for your boy. And on top of that, everybody at the office knows I tried to leave early. This fucking ambulance is rolling into the parking lot. People are looking out the window like, is that Ross?
You know, did he just kill someone?
I have to, like, did he just murder that time-traveling 1980s accountant? And I had to tell the story because, like, one of the ways you recover from something like this is to, like, share it, burden other people with your tale. So, like, in the morning the next day at work, I was like, you guys are not going to fucking believe this. Like, this is for, we had 53 employees at this point. Like, this is for the people, aside from the people I was close to in the office, who I obviously was even, I was texting them while it was going on, like, yep, I didn't get home. I'm out here in the fucking parking lot with a corpse. Like, it was insane trying to explain it to people. Like, it was bonkers, man. It was a wild one. So shout out to anybody who's ever dealt with a dead body, because it's not fun. It's not fun, especially when they're hefty and sweaty. Covered in piss and death. Just fucking
That's all. Not the dead body you want to come across.
It wasn't, dude. If I had to pick, I wouldn't have picked this guy. Like, no offense to this cat, but, like, he was not what I wanted to deal with. So, anyway, that was that. Today's episode is also brought to you by Manscaped, who has taken a step up from Balloween to bring your face the cleanest shave it's ever seen. So this season... So this season, no need to toil and trouble. Manscaped's all-new Handyman is the best way to get rid of that stubble. Featuring a compact design. Going from that story to this ad read, dude, is fucked. Okay, I focus. I have to get through this. Featuring a compact design and next gen. Uh, All right. Featuring a compact design and next-gen skin-safe technology, the Handyman was designed to give you that smooth finish without the mess of a traditional shave. Get the sweetest treat this Halloween by going to manscaped.com and using code RBP for 20% off plus free shipping. Personally, I'm not really a full-blown beard guy. Like, I keep a little scruff because that's what Cade likes. But if I ever need to clean up my look on the go and be a little smoother, Manscaped's Handyman is the perfect tool for the job. It's easy to carry, it's easy to use, and it's easy to see why dudes who try the Handyman never look back. It may be spooky season, but you don't want to scare people with a scraggly beard. Give them something to look at with Manscaped's Handyman for wet or dry use. Feel free to bring this anywhere and everywhere. The compact design and airplane friendliness make this the perfect travel tool for on the go. And being able to shave up to 3 days growth without the mess of a wet shave is priceless. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code RBP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code RBP for a look as sweet as candy. Get yourself the Handyman from Manscaped. Holy shit, that was challenging, dude. That was challenging. Those lines were difficult to deliver. Right after discussing a dead body. Holy fuck. Okay, so at this point, everyone who participates in internet culture on a daily basis is aware that a debate was sparked on Instagram after a list was compiled by a group of women of the 28 places men shouldn't take them on a first date. And it was shared on Instagram this past Tuesday by the page at Duval Promo, which just makes it kind of even funnier. I believe that's referencing Duval County in Miami, if I'm not mistaken.
Jacksonville, maybe?
Florida.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's proven to be very divisive with men and women arguing about, how valid this list is. So this is the list of places that women absolutely refuse to go on a first date. It starts off kind of hot with Cheesecake Factory. Do you have any experience at Cheesecake Factory?
Yeah, I've been a few times. It's been a few years. I did love to go to Cheesecake Factory, but my girl, she always would argue with me when we went there, so yeah. Kind of has a sour spot in my mind.
See, the women don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't know anything's wrong with Cheesecake Factory, especially for a first date.
No, I feel like that's...
It's a fine dining establishment.
Yeah,
not a fine dining establishment, but it's fine.
Yeah, it'll get the job done. It's nice. Like, it's not...
Well, let me put it this way. It's not the next two places on the list, which are Applebee's and Chili's.
Yeah, that's a huge step down.
I understand those complaints. If somebody asks you out on a date and they take you to a fucking Applebee's, it's better to ask a woman to go on a walk as a first date than it is to go to an Applebee's or a Chili's, unless this is some kind of inside joke between the two of you already.
Unless you're you're a really big fan of Applebee's or Chili's.
But
Jared, which one is he?
He loves Chili's.
Yeah.
But even then, not for a first date. I mean, unless it's a joke, maybe with Jared if he was able to work the comedy angle of why it's funny to go to Chili's. Like, for a normal, everyday person just trying to get a relationship started,
Chili's is not the move.
The fuck are you doing taking somebody to Applebee's or Chili's? That's crazy. Cheesecake Factory, on the other hand, I don't really know why it's getting lumped in here. Next on the list is Chipotle. I mean, yeah, that's kind of like fast food, you don't want to...
Yeah, which is also on the list.
Yeah.
Just any fast food chain, which I would definitely throw Chipotle in here.
Is just fast food in general on here? Does it say?
Yeah.
Oh, it says any fast food chain. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. No, Chipotle belongs in that category. It is fast food. But I guess some dudes who cheap out hard are like, Chipotle's a step up from regular fast food. I can pull this off. Olive Garden is on here. Look, Olive Garden is a step down from Cheesecake Factory in my mind.
Yeah.
But it's also I don't know. It's cheap Italian food.
Yeah, I feel like it's not a terrible option for a first date.
You're out here balling on a budget. What do you want?
Get those free breadsticks.
Yeah,
That free salad. Come on.
Load up. Olive Garden's a questionable one for me. On the list is also the movies. I have made this argument before.
That's fair, yeah.
Bad first date spot, bro. There's no conversation to be had.
Mm-mm.
That's just creepy. Now you're sitting next to a stranger. Not getting to know each other. Watching a fucking movie. It's just
after a few dates, maybe.
Sure.
maybe a moo, but yeah, not the first one.
It also says your house.
Yeah, you're just trying to get some butt. That's what you're saying.
Or do a murder. Yeah,
or both.
You got to earn some trust. Yeah, that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah,
the both one. You got to earn some trust before you invite him over to your house, fellas. That's come on, we're better than that. Then there's any fast food chain, Buffalo Wild Wings. Which, what if it's like a big sports fan that you're taking on a first date?
I still feel like there's better spots.
Okay,
like,
that's fair.
I do fuck with B-dubs.
Yeah.
But still not a good first date spot.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's better, like, if you wanted to go to, like,
better
a sports bars. Yeah.
Yeah. We used to go to B-dubs for lunch in high school because they were really nonchalant about fake IDs. And they didn't care that we smoked cigs inside. So, like, you could go upstairs. Upstairs, you were allowed to smoke cigs. That was the smoking area. This is back in, like, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, the rules have changed since then. So we would go to B-dubs and drink beers and rip heaters.
Just hell yeah.
Totally degenerate as, like, 17-year-olds. It was really fucked up. Like, it was a Buffalo Wild Wings on Westheimer in Houston, Texas. I've done some bad things in there. Shout out to B-dubs. But, yeah, probably not the move for a first date. You're right, kid. Even if you're both of you, big sports people, and you're going to go watch a game or something, like, find a fucking better sports bar, like a less generic sports
especially
bar.
Especially, like, in Austin, like, there's so many options to, like, go to a bar and watch a game.
I feel like most big cities now,
they have other options than beat-ups, yeah.
Yeah. Wingstop is on here, which...
Again, fast food chain.
Fast food. Red Lobster. I this is one of those places like Arby's where I'm like, who the fuck goes to Red Lobster, bro? I don't think of seafood as something you can deal with in a fast foodie atmosphere. Like, I know Red Lobster is like a sit down joint,
yeah.
But it also makes me think of Happy Gilmore, where Shooter McGavin hires that guy to distract Happy Gilmore during that one tournament and yell out things like, "You're gonna need a towel and suntan lotion because you're never gonna get off that beach, you jackass." And then after Shooter McGavin goes to pay the guy for doing all that, he tells Shooter, like, "Hey, Shooter, I'm heading to Red Lobster. You know, meet me there if you want." Like, that's what Red Lobster makes me think of. And I don't know. I would just, I would never have in a million years thought to take anybody to Red Lobster for a date. So, like, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, Red Lobster's not a move for me, but, like, I could see why. Like, it's kind of like in that Olive Garden.
Like a slightly classier fast food joint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I that's fair. Put that with Olive Garden.
Yeah.
Okay. A buffet. There's tight buffets, though. Like, sometimes. Like, you can find a buffet that's balling. Like, you just...
Like, wasn't there one that you used to go to that we talked about on the show before? Golden Corral. Is that a buffet?
I don't know. You may be hallucinating.
Yeah, I might be on something.
That elf hat is on too tight. I've been to good buffets, like, but I understand the sentiment of, like, the tone of a buffet is kind of like cheap and weird for a first date. Probably better off on, like, a third date buffet than the first date, because, like, you're trying to set the tone. The other thing, as a dude who has made this mistake multiple times, a lot of guys have, like, the opposite tendency, which is not to cheap out and go to a fucking buffet or a fucking Olive Garden. You're like, I want to make myself look as good as possible, so you take them to a really nice joint that's, like, probably outside of your budget. It's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're setting the tone in a wrong way there, too, because you're like, now you're suddenly, the expectations are set.
Yeah, that's never
the It's a dangerous
move. Yeah, that's not the move either, to go outside of
your budget? No,
yeah.
It's not. Don't do it. I've made that mistake. IHOP is on this list. Unless you're both raging alcoholics, then I get it. But IHOP is not a place for a date. Any number of date. Date, maybe if you're married.
IHOP's
a good
move.
You want to go to IHOP? But, like, fucking, come on. Denny's is on here right below IHOP.
Just better breakfast options.
Yeah.
Better brunch options.
And those are just, like, that's just IHOP and Denny's are not for sober people.
No, that's, you go there,
you,
like, hungover. Yeah.
Fucked up currently?
Yeah.
Or still fucked up from the night before.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you go to Denny's or IHOP. The gym.
That's so weird. As someone that goes to the gym, I don't know why your first date would be at the gym when you're gonna, like,
you want to go to get a pump in together?
Yeah.
Fucking, I'll spot you. That's a psychotic move.
No, like, I get meeting someone at the gym. And, you know,
but then what, asking them to go to the gym with you where you met them? Hey, you want to meet here again tomorrow and we'll call it a date?
Yeah, no,
I'll spot you?
That's not, I don't think anyone is doing that.
It's basically the equivalent of saying, like, I was staring at your ass while you were working out and I would like to do that from up close tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you? No. Other thing on the list, church. And I would just say, from a non-religious spiritual standpoint, this is the same thing as with the movies. It's not a first date place. You can't talk to each other. The fuck? Let's go take in a sermon? Who the fuck? That, first of all, you're lowering, like, you're casting a much smaller net there. Like, what if they're not spiritual? What if they're not religious? What if they've never been to church? You want to go to church together? That's not a fucking date. That's church. It's just weird. Don't do that. Next one is Starbucks. I mean, this is the same thing as Buffalo Wild Wings to me. There's other less generic and obvious coffee shops. Mm-hmm. If you want to do a coffee date, that's great, fine, normal. But not Starbucks.
No.
It just makes it feel like you didn't put any effort or thought into where you're going.
What about Dunkin' Donuts?
The same category, just too obvious. Too...
But then we got coffee dates on the list next, which I think coffee date is
a fine date.
Yeah.
Especially for a first date.
You're just trying
not
to get
too
to
much
know,
pressure.
Trying to get to know someone, yeah.
Great place to conversate. You're both pumping some caffeine into the body, so you've got some energy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying shit you regret instantly. Everything's flying out of your mouth without any filter. Coffee date is solid. I don't know why that's on here. It also says ice cream dates, and that's fucking psychotic.
I think that what it's
you
like,
think it's a that's a bad idea? I'm saying putting it on the list is psychotic.
Okay, yes. Yeah. No, I think ice cream date is also a great date. Like,
who doesn't
date.
Love ice cream?
Right, yeah.
And if she's like, I'm lactose intolerant, it's like, oh, well, fuck it. We'll go to, you know.
Like a frozen yogurt place.
Or something. I don't know. But there's nothing wrong with ice cream. Ice cream date's fine. I don't know what... The standards are out of control here. Next one is a family function. Well, duh.
Yeah, 100% should be on the list.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair.
I'm not trying to meet your parents on the first date. That's
fuck
insane.
No. Fuck no. And it's a totally different, a family function. There's going to be all kinds of relatives there. Fucking aunts and uncles and shit saying weird stuff to me.
Yeah.
Hell no.
Bringing her to your grandma's funeral. Not the move.
Nobody needs that, Cade.
No.
Nobody needs that. Next one is movie night. And yeah, this is like the, I'm just trying to get laid.
Yeah, at your house.
And
yeah.
I'm the least creative person of all time.
Want Netflix and chill.
Yeah. You can't do that. Again, just the same thing as inviting them to your home. This is like a potential murder situation. You can't do it. Next thing on the list is somewhere that requires a long drive.
How long does that drive have to be for it to be considered long?
I'd say probably over a half hour for a
first
date.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
For a first date. Because like a half hour is fine. Because that's, again, time to get to know each other in the car. Ask some questions about each other. Talk a little bit about each other. Plus, when they get in your car, they can get a decent idea of how much of a slob you are based on how clean or unclean the car is.
Or how terrible of a driver you are.
Exactly. Right? And I understand as a woman, you may be not like, you're not trying to get into an enclosed space with a man you don't really know well enough yet, but like, I don't know. You should have good enough radar to like, on some level, determine like this person is at least okay to get in a car with. Have your phone out the whole time or something if you must or like, or whatever.
Have your location.
Again,
send it to someone. Yeah.
And this is, I'm responding to this list as a man. I clearly do not know what it is like to be a woman. Y'all make your own decisions. Do what you have to do to survive. I get it. But I'm just saying, I don't know that, like, there's some places it takes a little bit of time to get to, especially in big cities. And if somebody offers to pick you up and drive you, I don't think that's like, out of the question anymore. I understand that there might be circumstances where you have to say, like, fuck no, I'm not riding with this dude in the car until I get to know him better. That's fine, too. I'm just saying it shouldn't be, like, completely out of the question. Bowling is the next one. What do you think about that?
I don't think it should be on the list.
I don't either. Bowling is fun, man.
It's fun. You're doing an activity.
Don't have to be an athlete to bowl, kid.
No, it can be a little competitive.
Yeah.
But no, you're not getting too crazy with it unless you're just like a crazy good bowler. But then I feel like you probably don't want to go bowling because then you're just going to like be showing off and she might not like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're a really good bowler, like you're in a bowling league or you bowl frequently, then it's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ask somebody to go fucking bowling with you just because that's what you're bowling guy. That's now it's weird.
Yeah.
But if you're like me or you, who we never go bowling, when's the last time you went bowling?
Oh, it's been so long.
Yeah, been a long time for me too. We should go sometime, not on a date, but like, you know, casually as friends. Then it's fine. I think that's cool. Bowling is fun. And what you said about like a little competition can insert like some fire and sexual charge into your date
too.
Yeah,
a little flirty.
A little fun.
Yeah.
Flirtatiousness. Yeah. No, I like bowling. I don't think bowling should be on this list. This list seems like it was made by people who are not fun to me. The next one is nightclubs. And
Yeah, it should be on the list.
That's fair. The next one is hookah bar. You got any feelings on hookah?
I've never done it before, but like I can see why it's on the list. Like, I don't want to have a conversation with someone. You just blow clouds in my face.
Hey, you want to go smoke flavorful tobacco with me? No,
no.
I don't. No. Hookah bars suck. Okay? Hookah bars suck. Hookah doesn't do anything. I'm not a hookah guy. I think it's like a cultural thing in some respect. My white ass is out. A bar just for drinks is on the list here.
This,
next,
I feel like, is the best option for a first date.
I don't know how this is out of the question. How it's included on here with shit like the next one is Waffle House, and like again, we just did IHOP and fucking Denny's. How did we? They're like, oh, Waffle House. Make sure we put that on there, and it didn't make it till 20 spots later. But like, I get Waffle House. I don't get how you just are like, I never want to be taken to a bar for just some drinks. There's like classy bars. Good date spot bars in most big cities that I think it would be totally fine if the shoe was on the other foot for me.
And it's easy because, like, you know, you can just start off with the one drink and you just see how things go. If it's going well, you're like, all right, do you want to get another drink or you want to go to a different bar? And then, like, you just, like, go from there. And if it's not good after the first drink, then you just be like, all right, I got to go home.
And again, I think a bar like that scenario can tell you a lot about a person. Like, if they're four drinks deep before you finished your one drink, you're like, okay, this is getting a little weird.
I always, like, will finish my drink. Like, when I go on dates, like, I'll, like, always finish mine first just because, like, I'm just like, I drink fast, but like
I'm a fast drinker too. Yeah.
But I'll always wait until like they're done or like close to being done before you get another one.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be like, they're like halfway done with theirs. I'm like, oh, I could like get two more right now. And so, yeah.
That's not the move. No. And I mean, if you're nervous or you're just a raging alcoholic, like take a beer down at home before, right? That's the strategy. Don't pound in front of your date. Fucking lunatics. I just remember being in my 20s and having to think through shit like this and being like, well, I do want to be a little drunk though.
Yeah, right.
So you drink at home.
Yeah, just have
don't drink so much that it's apparent that you've already drank.
Yeah. But speaking of Waffle House, I did see I think it was yesterday that Russell Wilson and Sierra went there for a date. And, like, he bought out the whole Waffle House for the night.
Yeah, that's different, though.
But apparently Sierra really loves Waffle House. So, again, if she loves Waffle House, then it's not that weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
It all depends on, like, what you guys are into. Like, if you're really into fucking Wingstop, then go to Wingstop. But, without knowing the person, then it's not a good spot, for sure.
No. You better have a reason for pulling Wingstop out of the hat. sports events is the last one on the list, and this is just the same as movies and sports and church to me. Sporting event, it doesn't really allow you to have a whole lot of conversation. I mean, I guess it depends on the sporting event, but like an NFL game for a first date, if you're both enormous fans and that has been established, it's fine. Frankly, that's a nice first date. NFL games are not cheap.
But yeah, no, if you're getting like a free ticket too, like,
shit, yeah,
you
know, dude.
I'm taking you up on that.
If you're
that,
a big fan, but if you're not a sports fan and somebody asks you to go to like a fucking baseball game, it's circumstantial again for me, but I also understand why this one is on the list because it does feel like a cop out a little bit.
Maybe like a baseball game would be nice, like a triple A game, like where you don't really care, but you just want to like be out
in the
sun. No, get a hot dog. Beer.
I think the reason it's on the list and that some of these other things are on the list is because it strikes these women as a thing the dude wants to do. And they're just bringing me along for the ride. Like, if you would go do it anyway, then it's not really a date. I'm just, like, accompanying you to a thing you would do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sacrificing anything for my time. And I get that to some extent. But the problem overall with this list is that there's, like, nothing left. If you take all of this shit serious, like, what the fuck? So really nice restaurants only. That's pretty much it.
And You're forgetting about something here.
Where?
Dave and Buster's. Not on the list.
Holy shit, D&B didn't make the list, dude.
Arcade, feel like it's a great first date spot.
Dave and Buster's is low-key, as I've said before, much more adult than people realize. Mm-hmm. Like, to get to the game room, you got to go past the billiards, the bar, the restaurant, where it's all dark and, like, sexy in there. Well, it's not sexy, but that's what they're going for. That's what they're going for, yeah. Dark and sexy. It actually comes off as, like, creepy and sad. Mm-hmm. Because as a child, I only ever went to Dave & Buster's during the day. And when you have to pass the very dark billiards bar and restaurant in the middle of the sunshiny day to get to the game room, it is a little sad. Because you're just like, who the fuck would even be in here?
Yeah, you just see that one, like, and there's lonely, always, drunk, ripping cigs.
Yep, there's always that fucker is in there all the time. It's like a ghost that haunts the place. But that's a great observation. Dave & Buster's was not on this list.
Yeah, just any arcade. No, again, it's kind of like bowling. No, it's a little competitive. It can be. You can, get your date a nice little prize from the...
Yeah, give her all your tickets.
Yeah.
She can get, like, a bouncy ball or...
Yeah.
Fucking,
like a pencil eraser or something?
Fucking finger trap,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You can get her a finger trap. That's not saying anything.
No.
It's not... There's no fingering jokes to be made about the finger trap. It's fine.
No. No. None whatsoever.
No. No. God, the prizes in there are dog shit. You can get an Xbox game if you're willing to spend $300 on tickets. The Xbox game is 50 fucking bucks outside of the Dave & Buster's. It's going to cost you $300 worth of tickets.
But, I mean, it might be worth it to, impress your date.
Yeah.
So.
Dave & Buster's, man.
Hell yeah.
They need to take advantage of this. We need to hire, their marketing department needs to hire us to come up with, like, a full-blown commercial sketch for, like, this list and how Dave & Buster's isn't on it and how that's the new first date spot.
For sure. Yeah, no, we need to get on that. Our people will talk to your people, Dave & Buster's.
Bring your date to Dave & Buster's and play Area 51 to impress them,
mm-hmm.
You know? Or Time Crisis. That's the one that I really love. Where you press the pedal and your guy pops up and then you shoot people.
Mm.
You don't remember Time Crisis?
Past my time.
That's the other thing we got to go do together, kid. Yeah.
There's a...
We got to go bowling.
Bowling.
We got to go to Dave & Buster's. There was something else. Came up recently, not today. Schlitterbahn. I want to take you to the water park.
And Bucky's.
Yep. Yeah. That's the other one that came up recently.
There's actually like an arcade bar. I think like those are like so popular now, I feel like. Just like get a few drinks and like go play arcade games. Like there's one in Austin called Cidercade. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
And then, they got like all the games. They got like Dance Dance Revolution, Guitar Hero, a bunch of pinball games, a little bit of everything. Yeah.
There was one bar, I can't remember the name. It's just been so long for me, but there was one bar when I was still deep in the game that had arcade games. It wasn't like the theme of the whole bar, but they had a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that place because as a socially anxious person, I don't like just like awkwardly standing around in a circle of people all the time waiting to see who's going to speak next.
Yep.
So I just go bash the games, dude. Those are fun as shit. Even to have something simple like Pac-Man in there was huge for me. So I enjoyed those. And speaking of it having been a long time, today marks 6 years without alcohol for me, 6 years without drinking. October 27th was the first day I spent having decided I was never going to drink again. And so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge that at the end of today's show. 6 years, Cade.
Please clap.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, as I say every year on this day, if drinking is taking more from you than it's giving you, you can live without it, and there's plenty else in this life to enjoy. I feel like a lot of people who are like me, who were just like drinking but experiencing like a lot of misery as a result, you feel like you can't stop because too much of your life is built around it. I promise you that is not the case. You can cut that out of your life and still have plenty of fun and figure out a bunch of other stuff to do. And it doesn't really matter anyway, because once you get into your 30s and you're married and you have kids, you won't have time to do shit anyway. So it's like, fuck it. Do what you got to do to be happy whenever it is that you got to do it.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm drinking for the both of us.
Yeah, Cade drinks double to make up for what I am not contributing to drunk society anymore.
Exactly.
And for that, we thank him. And that will do it for today's show, but please support our sponsors by hitting the links in the description of this episode and using our dedicated codes. That's how we pay the bills here at Bolin Media. You can find links to all of our sponsors for today's episode in the description below. Also go to patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast and subscribe for as little as $5 a month to gain access to over 100 ad-free exclusive episodes that are only available there on Patreon. There's a whole bunch featuring Cade and I, a whole bunch featuring Jared and I, including last week's when Jared came through Austin and hopped on Patreon with me. If you've missed J-Bone doing the show with me and you want to hear us on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast, that's the way to do it. And usually we take hotline calls from listeners on Patreon, so you can hear from other people who listen to this show, and then you'll hear Cade and I, or Jared and I, if you're in the past, in the archive, respond to those calls. Patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. That's patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. Get in there today. Support the show. We cannot do this without you. We appreciate those of you who are there already. Patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. To check out our other shows, go to BolinMedia.com. We've got J-Bone's F1 show, Formula Bone, still covering each and every F1 race with a preview and a recap after the fact. Check out Formula Bone wherever you check out RBP. And the best place to do that really is youtube.com/@FormulaBone, where Jared has amassed over 100,000 subscribers to watch the man they call J-Bone talk about Formula One. We've got Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, where we are starting coverage of a new show next week called Foundation on Apple TV+. We're going to be starting coverage of Season 2. Foundation is badass. If you have not watched it, it's on Apple TV+. There's 2 seasons available. It is really, really good. If you trust my word on TV, which you should, then trust me, Foundation is a solid one. Go watch it. Enjoy our Season 2 coverage on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. BolinMedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. That's another way to support our show. We've got some funny RBP t-shirts, hats, mouse pads, coffee mugs. Everybody needs a finishing cup, Cade, because they need somewhere to finish.
Absolutely.
And we sell them on BolinMedia.com/shop. We've got Horny for Sunsets t-shirts. We got Ross Bolin Podcast crew necks for the wintertime. Lots of good stuff at BolinMedia.com/shop. Follow us on social media. At Ross Bolin Pod on Twitter, at the Ross Bolin Podcast on Instagram, at the Ross Bolin Podcast on TikTok. Follow me at WR Bolin. Cade, where can the people follow you?
You can follow me on all the social media platforms at Cade Orris, and that's KadeOrris.
This episode of RBP is presented by Bolin Media, and video of today's show was produced by Cade Orris. Go to youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast for full video of our show plus funny YouTube shorts. We'll be back next week. Right here, wherever you're taking in this show. And then again, on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast with another ad-free exclusive episode, just like we do every week for those supporting us on Patreon. Until next time, have a great Halloween. Stay safe out there. Enjoy. If you see a gigantic Buddy the Elf, it's probably Cade, say hi. Peace be with you, and also with you.
Go low, baby.